Hey, welcome to another episode of Brooklyn Revolution, a podcast about the Brooklyn Nets. I'm Sandy Moy. You can find my work at 16 Wins a Ring, The Brooklyn Game, and brook-wins.com. Joining me today to talk about what's happened for the Nets in the past week is Mark Suleimanov, a writer who covers the Nets, among other teams at Hoops Rumors. Hey, Mark, how's it going?
Doing great, Sandy. Thanks a lot for having me.
No, thanks for coming on the show. So, there hasn't been much going on lately, but we're going to go over some kind of low-key storylines from last week. We'll start off with ESPN's projected records for the 2017-18 season, where the Nets, you know, drum roll, are in last. Last season, ESPN projected the Nets to finish with 20 wins, at least in their first forecast for last summer. And this summer's forecast has the Nets finishing 13th in the Eastern Conference with 29.5 wins. The highly esteemed ESPN analyst Kevin Pelton was the one who comes up with these predictions, and they're formulated based on ESPN's real plus minus statistic. In relation to the Nets, Pelton attributed the Nets staying in the lottery because of their big situation. This is what he said about Brooklyn. Quote, "The Nets have perhaps the NBA's worst big men." To be fair, I think 29.5 wins is selling it a bit short, but it is 9.5 more games than they won last season, and I still feel the Nets will be turning heads if they manage to stay healthy all season. Mark, what did you think of the Nets' win total and where they ranked in ESPN's projection?
Well, I definitely see the Nets improving next year. It's kind of hard not to improve after you win 20 games in a season. So, I mean, they've got that going for them. And, you know, to be quite honest, with the Eastern Conference the way it is, it's basically Boston, Cleveland, and then everybody else. So, I can definitely see the Nets sneaking into the 8th seed. If everyone stays healthy, like they obviously missed Jeremy Lin a lot last year to get him going along with the rest of the new core in place. I definitely think they could sneak into the 8th seed, and I could definitely see them adding 10 wins from last year to this year.
Right, I'm with you on that. I mean, the Eastern Conference being a lot weaker than it normally is probably why a lot of Nets fans and even me, you know, people like us think that they could sneak in with the 8th seed. So speaking on some other teams that jumped around, I'll just briefly touch on some teams I noticed moved up or down from where they finished last season. So for moving up, we have the Wolves, who moved up 9 spots. They're 4th in the Western Conference, at least that's what Pelton projects them to go, with 50.1 wins. Then there's also the Bucks, who moved up 2 spots. Pelton has them at 4th in the Eastern Conference with 46.9 wins. There's the Hornets, moved up 6 spots, right under the Bucks at 5th in the Eastern Conference, and they had 44.1 wins. And then there's also the Sixers, another rebuilding team, moved up 5 spots, and they're going to finish, based on Pelton's projections, right under playoff contention, so 9th in the Eastern Conference with 33.2 wins. Then for teams that moved down a bit, there's the Utah Jazz, moved down 3 spots. So Pelton, I guess, just sees the Hayward leaving as somewhat of a drop for them. They moved down to 8th in the Western Conference, 44.7 wins. Then there's the Grizzlies, moved down 5 spots and ranked 12th in the Western Conference with 34.6 wins. Pacers moved down 4 spots and they're 11th in the Eastern Conference with 32. The Bulls moved down 6 spots with 14th in the Eastern Conference and 28.5 wins. And then the team with the obviously the biggest drop, the Hawks, 10 spots, and they're going to finish last in the Eastern Conference with 27 wins. Mark, did any of the other projections stand out to you?
I was a little surprised by the Sixers prediction. I think they could definitely be a playoff team. You know, once again, healthy. Embiid, same thing as we were talking about with Lin. He only played about 30 games last year. So if they can get him healthy, if Fultz can stay healthy, I think his ankle's healed up, so he should be fine. If Simmons can stay healthy, that's a lot of what ifs with that team. But if all of those guys can stay healthy, then you add in Redick into the equation, gives them some perimeter shooting and some veteran leadership, NBA Finals experience with the Magic in 2009. I could definitely see them being a 6 or 7 seed, but that one was one that surprised me a little bit. And also, you mentioned the Bulls fell six spots, right?
Yes, I said that.
Yeah, so with the Bulls, I don't think 6 is low enough because that team just lost so much talent. And I could honestly see the Bulls fighting out with the Hawks for the worst team in the East pretty easily, actually.
I think I'll vouch for the Hawks to be a bit better than where they are now. I mean, if you say the Bulls falling 6 spots isn't enough, then, well, they were ranked 14th in the Eastern Conference, so they could take over the Hawks spot. But we'll see. It's a lot of what-ifs, as you said. I mean, the Sixers had a lot of guys I thought the Nets would go after, but moving along to something else that's related to ESPN, Zach Lowe wrote a piece last week detailing the Nets' rebuild. Just to give a quick summary, Lowe talks about everything the Nets have done to move forward from the Billy King era, and he spends a lot of words on all the moves Sean Marks has made this summer and last summer. All in all, I thought the article was a great deep dive into the Nets' vision and what Sean Marks is building in Brooklyn. Mark, what was your overall impression of Lowe's article?
Well, like you said, very in-depth. It's very indicative of what the Nets are trying to build in Brooklyn. Like, I've been around the team a little bit. I've been to the training center. I've covered the team going back to last year. And it really is, like, if you compare the Knicks and the Nets, it's a completely different thing. And I really think Lowe's article really kind of explains that a little bit better, because they are like a tight-knit group. I see them all. You'll see the players working out, having a good time. You'll see Marks all the time. You know, one thing that stood out in Lowe's article was Marks saying that they don't talk about that Boston trade anymore from a few years ago, where they acquired Garnett, Pierce, and Terry, and then, you know, they traded all those draft picks. So, and he just mentioned they don't talk about that, and that's such an important thing, because fans and pundits and all these people are gonna tear apart the team and ownership for doing that trade all those years ago. But it serves no purpose to look back at this point, because you can't change it. You can only build for the future. And then Lowe gets into talking about how they're doing that. All these different moves, like, I'm sure we'll get into it. Like, they just traded for Alan Crabb from the Blazers, the guy that they were going after last year, which shows consistency. It shows that they're not veering off their path. This is the player they wanted last year, and the first chance they got, they got him in the Blazers, and it was, you know, a good deal. And then they took Carroll's contract for draft picks, another great deal, and for, once again, a player who can be very useful if healthy. And then you add in Russell, you add in LeVert in his second year. He's probably going to make progress. So it's just, I just found Lowe's piece very informative and very indicative of what the team is doing.
There's certainly a lot that talks about the Nets' direction, and I found it to be quite compelling for, you know, a general NBA writer. A lot of people tend to get stuff wrong about the Nets if they don't have that, you know, like, deeper look into the team. I picked out some specific components to highlight, and let's get into some stuff Nets higher-ups talked about related to the direction of the team. So there's Arina Pavlova, who recently stepped down as the president of Oxenham Sports and Entertainment Holding. That's the holding company for the Nets and the Barclays Center. This is what she said about the team. Quote, "In my 7 years here, this is the first time it feels like a team and not just 15 guys on a roster," end quote. And just to provide some more context, she said this at a dinner before the Nets' last game of the season. So that's after they've gone through nearly a whole year of injuries, losses, you know, player development, and ultimately finished with just 20 wins. That's the thing we can say about the Nets time and time again, though. Like, under Sean Marks, they have the culture of a team builder, no matter how many wins they come out with. Speaking of winning, another thing Lowe brings up is the Nets won't be tanking. Nets chairman Dmitry Razumov said they'll accept a 25-win team next season, quote, "if the guys make progress," end quote. Marks has also said that tanking isn't in the cards, and the goal is to compete and win games. I mean, the Nets will finally have their own pick in 2019, but The only way they'd be tanking is by accident, and that's if their youth doesn't develop. I don't think that's a bad mindset to have at this stage, and I hope even more for their sake that by 2019 their young core would have developed enough for the Nets to be competing at a higher level, and as Lowe mentions, could be good enough to attract some more big names to Brooklyn in free agency. Mark, what did you make of this no tanking philosophy?
Well, first of all, I'd like to say that Pavlova's comments sound like somebody who's out the door trying to make excuses for having 7 crappy years and trying to take some credit for the team rebuilding. So I'll just leave it at that. As far as I found that interesting, saying that the team would accept a 25-win season if that meant the young guys develop. That's a strategy a lot of teams don't like to be heard out loud, because whether it be Commissioner Silver, explaining that he doesn't like the idea of teams tanking to secure better picks to build for the future, because it creates a less competitive NBA. But also, like you said, Marks counterbalances that by saying, "Oh, no, we are going to compete and we're going to be competitive, and the only way we would be tanking is, I think he said semi-accidentally or something like that."
Yeah, that's what he said.
So I'm not even sure what that means, semi-accidentally tanking. So I just think what they're trying to get at is they're going to compete, and if they start losing, then they're just going to go with it. And I think that's the team's intention, is to make as strong of a run as possible. If it doesn't work, you just back to the drawing board. You pick out the pieces that work, the things that were good, you keep that in there, and then you take out the players or the personalities or the personnel, whoever isn't contributing the way you want them to, and then you just go from there. And if they can keep that consistency going as far as building a roster, acquiring players, I definitely see them being able to get those blue chip prospects that they want on the team.
Well, I think that's exactly what Marks meant by semi-accidentally tanking. Basically, if they go out and compete and then just start losing. I guess similar to how they performed last season, because they were out there playing hard and it didn't always result in wins. So I think that's exactly what he meant.
Well, also, but you have to remember last year they literally went in with no expectations. They
That is true.
signed Lin, and it was like, oh yeah, we did something, so you can't really complain. But then the season starts, Lin's hurt, Lopez is Steve Novak for the season, and then that's it. They can't win a game, and it's just everything's going wrong. And so I do think that they're on the right track, though. That's the thing they have going for them.
And I know 2019 won't be coming for another couple of years, but Lowe also touched on what to expect as we enter next season. So this is on the subject of projected lineups. Atkinson said Rondae Hollis-Jefferson will open training camp as the starting power forward. So it looks like the Nets will pick up right where they left off last season in the Hollis-Jefferson at the four experiment. Lowe also says there will be fierce competition between five players. He mentions D'Angelo Russell, Jeremy Lin, Allen Crabbe, Caris LeVert, and Domari Carroll. But his bet is on the Lin LeVert Crabbe trio, with LeVert's grip being the quote-unquote shakiest. Lowe also calls Crabbe and Russell legitimate rotation guys. So I guess this problem the Nets have with unclear lineups in August might not be such a bad thing. They clearly have a lot more depth than they did last season. There aren't as many fringe players as Lowe brings up, like just random veteran guys filling up the roster. Mark, we won't spend a whole lot of time on this, but what did you think about Lowe's comments on the Nets' new players?
I definitely could understand why LeVert might have the shakiest grip on the team, because I think he also has the highest upside. So you wouldn't want to rush up a guy like that into a role that he's not ready for, because that's how you end up with players like Derek Williams. I say end up with players like Michael Beasley, who were top picks, and they just never got the chance either to A, develop, or B, find a niche on a team where they can be successful. And that's resulted in them having to bounce around the league and be on their fourth, fifth, sixth team in 3 years, and they still don't have a role. They have talent, but they don't have a role. So that's the good thing with LeVert here, is they're in a position where they can bring him in slowly. He missed the first part of last year with that foot injury, so I think that slowed his progress down a little bit. He obviously came back and he looked good when he was on the court, but like I said, you can't rush a guy like that that you have so much invested in just to, you know, just a semi-tank or whatever the hell that they're planning on doing. So, and then as far as like rotation guys, Russell, I mean, I absolutely love that deal for Russell, because how often are you going to get a chance to acquire a player who just a year and a half ago was the second overall pick by the Lakers? So when you get a chance to get a guy like that, and what are you losing? Lopez's expiring contract? Like, it's great, you know, we appreciate what you did, but you're getting a possible cornerstone player. And they got Mozgov too, which I think is a very underrated move for the team, because he's going to give them that size that they don't have. He's going to give them that playoff experience that they don't have. And apparently he's shooting threes now in Nets practice, so we'll see how that goes. And then Crabb, we spoke about him. Second year in a row coming off the bench, averaged 10 points a game, you know, still a solid shooter. Played almost 30 minutes a game, so this is the kind of talent that they need on that team. And they're in a position where they don't have to commit to anything. They can see what works, what doesn't. They can bring along their younger players, and they could just have solid veterans soak up minutes for them and see what happens from there.
Well, there's definitely a lot of storylines to keep our eyes on this season with, like, new players and such. One last thing I wanted to touch on in Lowe's piece was how the Nets are keeping tabs on their players. I think this probably drew most of the mainstream places to report on. So the Nets have been keeping daily questionnaires about sleep, soreness, and diet for their players. And also Joe Harris has said the Nets have been keeping track of the color of players' urine, which was probably the most shocking takeaway everyone had from the whole article. I know that's the storyline that ended up on Bleacher Report. I had to do a double take when I got the team stream notification. I was like, what?
Well, have you seen the new Nike uniforms?
Yes, I did.
Yeah, so they have to track the color of the piss. So if they piss themselves during the game, you could tell that the uniform can get stained easily or not. So that's why they have to do it.
Okay, Mark.
Yeah, I just have to throw that in there.
All right. Well, moving on to some more recent moves the Nets made. I know it's been pretty quiet as of late, but last week, Brooklyn signed Milton Doyle and Jeremy Sengun to partially guaranteed deals. Both of them went undrafted in this year's draft and played for the Nets in Summer League. Doyle in particular got a lot of love on Twitter after the Nets announced the signings. He had the more notable performance in Summer League. He averaged 10.5 points, 3.5 rebounds, and 1.8 steals per game. Sengun had 7 points, 2.2 rebounds, and 0.5 assists per game. Mark, do any of these two guys jump out at you in particular?
I don't want to offend anybody. I don't want to temper expectations, but all teams sign these kind of guys who went undrafted and just had, you know, bursts of success in the summer league. So I really try not to put too much stock into these. I mean, I liked what I saw from Doyle. I honestly didn't see too much of their play, but what I did see, I liked Doyle. But like I said, every team brings in these kind of guys towards the end of the offseason and the beginning of training camp. So it's really hard to pinpoint, oh, are they going to mean anything to the team, or are they going to, you know. Like just for the Knicks, for example, last year when they had, Chase and Randall. Mm-hmm. I thought, wow, that's a really good player. They could probably use him. He ended up getting injured. They got rid of him. They brought him back. And so it's just these long line of things that happen in succession. You can't really put too much stock into it.
I mean, I see them spending a majority of their time, if not all of it, at least the coming season in Long Island. And that's right now they only have Yakuba Otero on a two-way deal, so they can sign one more player on a two-way contract back in May. This name might sound familiar. Jacob Wiley reportedly signed a two-way contract with the Nets, but there hasn't been any word directly from the team about that. As for Doyle and Sengun, I mean, we do have a lot of guards on the roster right now. It's like the one notable thing about the Nets roster right now.
Yeah, exactly. So, I they don't really need any more guards. Like they even when I covered the Russell and Mozgov presser, they stressed that they need size on their roster. And I mean, yeah, you bring in two guards, they have some potential, that's good, but they really need size. So if they do make any more moves, I anticipate it'll be for, some big bodies that they're really lacking right now.
Yeah, so I think the most plausible scenario is they'll end up in Long Island, and we'll see like what they do at training camp, maybe even get a shot in preseason. It's just difficult, as you mentioned, to gauge who they get a spot over. And because of that, I don't see it as being a main thing for them long term.
Exactly.
So before we wrap up, I just wanted to touch on where the Nets roster and cap room stands at this point. I'm not an expert at cap space, so I've seen anywhere from around $2 million to $5.1 million for what the Nets have left. Real GM's Keith Smith reported last week that the Nets have 2.1 million to 6.5 million remaining. I'm assuming this huge gap has to do with Foy's cap hold. And as for how many roster spots they have left after the Doyle and Sengun signings, the Nets are at 16 players with 13 on guaranteed deals. They can bring up to 20 players to training camp, thanks to Nets Daily for all this info. And I still anticipate, as we just mentioned a little bit earlier, that the Nets should go after a big, as we have said a lot this offseason, but it'll be more likely like through a trade. We could see them package, I guess, a Sean Kilpatrick or a Trevor Booker possibly to complete another move. And remember, aside from undrafted players, the Nets have not signed any free agents so far this summer, so there's lots left to be desired on that end.
Yeah, but the free agent market's very thin, like at this
It
point.
really
There's
is.
not there, there's not really I'll have to double check, but I think Michael Beasley might have been the biggest name left on the market until the Knicks signed him this week. So they're really gonna probably have to, like you said, go to the trade market, see what they can do, or just take the roster they have to training camp, because that's slim pickings out there.
Well, I don't see the Nets going after him anymore just because they don't have the room, but when the hell are the Grizzlies going to sign JaMychal Green?
That's an interesting guy for the Nets, I think, Green, but I don't really know if they have the financial capability or the desire to have him. But that's a guy I think would fit on the Nets.
We talked about this on like a few podcast episodes prior. A lot of Nets fans are high on him. I just don't see it happening anymore with the little space they have left. But that's it for this week's Brooklyn Revolution podcast. I'm Sandy Mui. You can find me on Twitter at SandyMui1134 and read my work on 16 Wins a Ring, the Brooklyn Game, and brook-wins.com. Thank you so much for coming on the show today, Mark, and please let our listeners know where to find you.
Thanks, Sandy. You can follow me on the Twitter at TheMarkOut1. That's just my name, Mark, out, and the number one. You can also follow me on Instagram at TheMarkOut. And in real life, I am just Mark.
Mark was one of the sports editors at my school paper who honed my sports writing early on, so I really appreciate him coming on today. And thank you so much for listening to the podcast. If you like the podcast, be sure to follow us on SoundCloud and give us a rating and review on iTunes. If you miss Nets basketball, be sure to check out D'Angelo Russell's game winner from the Dickman basketball tournament and the Nets' new Nike uniforms, as Mark touched on earlier. Maybe I'll save that for the next episode, but until then, see you next time.